The Around the NFL Podcast is a factory of gladness.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Merry Christmas Eve from NFL Network's podcast headquarters in Culver City. We're always here.
What a night to be spending together. A festive atmosphere. Mark glowing in his Browns sweater, and good reason to. I mean,
Greg, who's never celebrated Christmas, could care less.
I celebrate Christmas every year of my life.
Well, you have
That's the facts.
You have it all.
And, you know, we
Greg
can't be
celebrates
with our,
every holiday.
We're not with our families,
but
we're kind of with our family. You know what I'm saying, guys?
I guess. Yeah, I agree.
I celebrate Saturnalia. Pagans had the right idea.
I'm ready. I'm ready to go home to my family, but there's a job to be done here, okay? And that is talk about all the football that was played on Saturday of exciting football. By the way, this is our Sunday night recap show, Saturday edition, sponsored by Friday, and brought to you by Tuesday by your good friends on Monday and Wednesday. So,
crystal clear.
Oh, and Mr. F in his economics class in The Hague, the Netherlands.
Mr. F. By the way, this morning, about 10 minutes after I woke up, the USPS knocked on my door with a gigantic gift package of wonderment from Mr. F, who delivered gifts for all of us, including Sydney. I've got to get you one, Sydney. What a guy. Shipped it from his family's home in Colorado.
What do you get for the girl that literally has everything?
Well, I think he might have purchased this before she became ultra wealthy, so it maybe has no use to her. We'll have to see when she opens it.
Okay. Yes. Thank you, Mr. F. You're the man. Thank you to everybody for listening. If you're listening tonight or on Christmas or the day after, you know that we love you, and this has been a great season with you, and happy to spend the holidays with you. And I was all set to open the show, by the way, and talk about how all four of the big QBs in the MVP talk had huge days today. Matt Ryan, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Derek Carr. Something truly terrible happened. So on this Christmas Eve where, you know, it's all about good cheer and, being warm and with your family, we have to start with a terrible situation. It happened at the Black Hole. Let's start there with our first game of the day.
Second one from the five. And completes it. And Wolford takes it home for the touchdown. Broke away from T.J. Green. And Carr has his second touchdown toss of this first half.
Yes, that was Jim Nantz of CBS. Derek Carr threw for three touchdowns, no interceptions, and the Raiders stayed in the hunt for the number one seed with a 33-25 win over the Colts. But this was a hollow, painful victory for Oakland, who lost Carr to a broken fibula in the third quarter. The MVP contender will undergo surgery to repair the fracture, out indefinitely, translation out until 2017, you would think. Chris Wessling. The Raiders were shaping up as the feel-good story of the playoffs. In one instant, all that promise wiped away.
If you could draw up a scenario that would have Raiders fans flying as high as possible, end of the third quarter was it. Five straight drives, touchdown drives, led by Derek Carr. The running game for the second straight week looked more dynamic with DeAndre Washington involved, a new element to that running game. After all the questions in Kansas City about that offense, they seem to have answered them, and then Derek Carr goes down. He gets his ankle trapped underneath his body. The first time the Colts defense laid a finger on him all day, early in the fourth quarter, and he goes down, and Dan, I think you saw this on replay, he immediately screamed out, "It's broke, it's broke."
Yeah, I mean, we have the internal feed that allows us to watch on our TV screens while you're at commercial break, and they were running the replay back and forth, and immediately he's pointing at it, not in a state of panic, more like anguish and just almost shock that he knew right away the season was over, which led to the surreal moment. He gets helped off the field, and this, to me, underscored how serious it was for this Raiders team that thought they could go to the Super Bowl. The entire team around the trainer's table on the Oakland sideline holding up Gatorade towels, trying to keep cameras off Derek Carr over, I guess, what felt like a really vulnerable moment for the franchise.
It's such a downer. You know, the Raiders were probably the best AFC story, and right there with the Cowboys is the best stories in the league. And we'll see. They might still get the bye. You know, by the time you hear this, things are going to happen on the Christmas day, and, you know, we'll see what happens there. They might still get the bye, but it's hard to see a team with Matt McGloin. I like Matt McGloin, but it's hard to see a team that's really led by their offense. This is not a defense and running team. It's a passing team. It's hard to see a team with Matt McGloin making the Super Bowl.
I like McGloin too, but not in January,
right,
against a field of playoff teams. And the implications in the AFC are massive. It felt like the Raiders were one of the teams that could potentially threaten to unseat the Patriots. Instead, you look at this conference, and you've got a Raiders, Dolphins, and Texans team that all have the new quarterbacks from the players they started with this year. Houston may be an upgrade. Alex Smith in Kansas City, please. And then it's maybe just Big Ben and the Steelers that have to rip off wins to get to New England.
And like so many teams in the NFL, I know the Steelers are playing very well right now, but I don't view them to be a flawless team by any stretch.
No.
I think the Raiders were, to me, and I'm bummed out about the AFC for a lot of reasons this year, but this to me is the death knell of the AFC being a compelling conference playoff to me, because the Raiders to me were juicy and they gave the Pats a little bit of heat. Instead, it's some serious Throne of Ease action. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and
oh!
Somebody
locked it up. Where's my lollipop? Sid, where are the lollipops?
Every week I leave them.
Cole, for you.
I know.
In the stocking.
I know. And I was waiting for a moment to put in the lock because everything was such a downer.
Doesn't really feel like a lollipop type of day with Carr going out,
yeah.
You know. And the Colts here can't be surprised that their defense didn't show up because they haven't shown up all season. But I've seen some speculation. You know, what's the surprise head coach firing going to be this year? I mean, couldn't it be the head coach that everyone fully expected to get fired a year ago when he had the same record, except Andrew Luck wasn't his quarterback playing well all year? And couldn't that be the surprise firing?
Yeah.
And go take Grigson with him.
Yeah, and go home, Colts.
I don't think he'd be taking Grigson with him. I think they'd quickly separate and go own ways.
Go home, Colts. Yeah, you're good, you're bad, you're good, you're bad. Figure it out and get back to us in 2017.
And go home, people that are criticizing Jack Del Rio for having Derek Carr in the game. There's no question he should be in the game at that point, and they should be throwing because you're playing the Colts. Every coach in the league would have had him, and it was literally the only QB hit they had all day. That's terrible
it's
luck.
It's just coming from people's frustration.
Yeah. Sometimes sports suck. So that happens, and they got banged in a big spot.
If you pull him in that situation, you have to start pulling him in the first half of games to prevent injuries. It doesn't make any sense.
The football god said no to the Raiders, and that's sad. Let's move on.
Two timeouts available for Rodgers in 32 seconds in the second. He is rushed this time. He rolls to his left. Rodgers will keep it himself to the five, makes a move to the goal line. Touchdown, Aaron Rodgers from 6 yards out. Rodgers scampers in to put the Packers up 27-13 deep here in the second quarter.
Kevin Lee, Westwood One Sports. Aaron Rodgers is playing out of his mind right now, and the Packers are emerging as a Super Bowl favorite as a result. Rodgers threw for how many touchdowns did I end?
He had four.
Four touchdowns.
Threw for four and ran for another.
38-25 win over the Vikings that stretches Green Bay's winning streak to six. Chris Wessling, if your grandkids ask you, what Aaron Rodgers was like at his peak, just point him in the direction of what's going on right now, right?
Show him a clip of Michael Jordan in 1991. That's Aaron Rodgers in his peak. You know, Matt Ryan probably deserves the MVP. He's done it all season long. He didn't have any cold streaks. Tom Brady's right there. Ezekiel Elliott, Aaron Rodgers. Those guys might have had better seasons, but there's no quarterback better than Rodgers right now, just because he's more talented than any other quarterback, and he's at the top of his game. He should have had six touchdowns today, but Devontae Adams dropped another one on Rodgers' best throw of the
obligatory
day.
His best is better than any other quarterback's best. I think we've seen
and
that.
And he's at his best
and
right
now. You mentioned it to me downstairs, so I don't mind bringing it up. I mean, this is the same season, and this is why I don't think Rodgers should be the MVP. I don't think it's crazy that he's in the mix, but I don't think he should be there with Ryan, Brady, and Zeke. It's because this is the same season that inspired Chris Wessling to say just 7 or 8 weeks ago that you didn't think we'd ever see that peak Rodgers again.
And we are seeing it
again. And then here he is. It's crazy.
Well, he's too young to cancel the idea that he would have come back to that point. You saw that through tape study, and you maybe wonder if it was gone, but there's too much left to Aaron Rodgers. My one concern with this team, though, this is a Vikings offense that has been absolutely stagnant for months and months, piled up 400-plus yards on this defense. The Packers' defense had improved, but come January, you're going to be playing Matt Ryan and the Falcons and other teams that can put up points and yardage.
Matt Ryan's Falcons have the same concern as the Packers do.
One thing that's been big for them, I saw during this streak, I think they have 15 takeaways and only one giveaway. So that's a huge part of the equation. And if their defense, they do have playmakers on defense. This is the second straight week they've given up a lot of plays. But if they can make plays kind of, you know, 2009 Saints style, where you get three turnovers a game and you still give up 450 yards and 25 points, maybe that's kind of their MO.
I mean, another angle to this game, and I think it's clear that, you know, and you can put it all on me, that the team of ATL has been an absolute... an absolute mess, and today's loss guarantees that they will not have a winning record. At best, they go to 8-8, and that doesn't even seem a reflection of what they've been.
We chose them as the team of ATL when they moved to 5-0 heading into their bye week. They're 2-8 since that point.
This will
be that
like,
on us?
This will be
that's
like every male in America that at this point, no male in America saw the film Titanic. No one in this room will have claimed to have voted for this team a year from now.
Well, and they had one of the ugliest stories we've heard all year that Terrence Newman and Xavier Rhodes literally decided to not follow Mike Zimmer's game plan and play sides instead of just having Rhodes man up against Jordy Nelson, and Nelson killed them.
Nelson destroyed them.
That's what you get.
They ought to
Who
be
does that?
They ought to be suspended for the season finale.
I agree.
You cannot just have a mutiny on your team.
That's a tough way for Terrence Newman to go out. Great career, but that might be about it.
Mike Zimmer, you know, after the game, said this. In the first half, Terrence Newman came over and said something to me like, I can cover this guy. Let me have him. I said, do what you're supposed to do.
And they just didn't listen.
They didn't listen to him.
Terrence Newman, a Mike Zimmer.
Fire everybody.
A Mike Zimmer favorite in Dallas, Cincinnati, and Minnesota. I think that's as close as any relationship between a coach and player in the league.
Unbelievable. And that, I mean, talking about a microcosm of the shipwreck, the Titanic wreck that's become this Viking season right there. Zimmer, a respected good coach, getting shown up by his own players. Ugly stuff, but the Packers are thriving and moving towards January. Let's move on. Talk about another NFC superpower that ran into some trouble today.
9 seconds. Cannon zero from 43 yards to win it. 5 seconds. Will he get it off? The kick is up, and it is good! A stunning win for Arizona. Cannon zero drills it home for a stunner. 34-31, Arizona.
Kevin Burkhardt and John Lynch of Fox. Chandler Cannizzaro's 43-yard field goal as time expired was the difference. The Cardinals dealt a rival a huge blow, a 34-31 win over the Seahawks at the clink. Go figure, Arizona. The Seahawks took the lead in the or tied the game in the final minute on a Paul Richardson touchdown catch, but it all went to hell after that for Seattle, starting with a PAT miss by Steven Hoschka that kept the game tied. And then Arizona went down the field. Big David Johnson reception, another huge game. And then, Mark, Arizona stole the game. The Seahawks won't sleep well on this Christmas Eve.
Yeah, it was quite a different result from the 6-6 tie we saw in Week 7, which was a highly bizarre game. I'm not sure if even Steven Hauschka had made that PAT. I mean, the Cardinals might have gone right down the field and done the same thing. I mean, this game started so slow. The Seahawks, I think, had 1 yard in the first quarter. 2 minutes into the second quarter, Russell Wilson had been sacked 4 times, and both teams couldn't really get it going, and then suddenly it became explosive in the second half. Very fascinating, fun game to watch, and a killer loss for the Seahawks, because what it does for them, they were the number 2 seed. You're knocked out right now. They've been overtaken by the Falcons, who, you know, watching both teams, I kind of think this may be good for the playoffs to put Atlanta in that number 2 spot.
Well, let's go to Tabulation Corner. What happens now, Greg Rosenthal?
Well, Atlanta has got the number 2 seed right now, and all they got to do is win at home against New Orleans next week, and they are sitting at home first week of the playoffs.
The Georgia Dome goes out on fire with a home game in the divisional round in that case. What a turn of events.
If they ever lost, the Seattle Seahawks get the 49ers next week.
Right,
so Seahawks, there's a lot to play for.
Right, but the Seahawks, they got problems just springing up now. It's December,
yeah,
and it's like new things are popping up. Now Thomas Rawls got hurt in this game, and so they got to go with Alex Collins in the second half. Tyler Lockett is out for the season after a gruesome ankle injury. He was the key, well, along with Doug Baldwin, he was the key receiver for this team down the stretch. And
he had
so,
just made the starting lineup last week.
Right, and had 130 yards and was playing great, and then their defense, they gave up 20 points in the fourth quarter.
They lost
game.
Cam Chancellor for a couple plays in the first half. And Carson Palmer and Bruce Arians wisely combined with the play call and the read of the field. Palmer nailed J.J. Nelson on an 80-yard touchdown. Nelson had 100, something like 130 yards in this game or so.
No,
big game for him.
No Lockett, no Earl Thomas. Right now, no Thomas Rawls. And the offensive line just doesn't match up with half the opponents on the schedule.
No.
This is not the same Seahawks team that was going into last year in the playoffs.
No, I would always give them a chance in a one-game playoff scenario, and that's what it is each week. But this is a team that – Carroll said it today in his press conference. Well, we just weren't ourselves out there in the first half. How many times has he said that over the last 6 weeks? I mean, that
it took
this
them
is
a while.
Right
the fact
now.
That they came very close to stealing this game, Arizona was a better game for a long – better team for a long stretch of this game. Is it oversimple? I know you guys laid it out very well. Is it oversimplifying to say that their season, just like the Raiders' season probably ended today with Derek Carr, that when Earl Thomas went out, everything else kind of – their defense is no longer the Seattle defense we know ever since he's gone out.
Nor is their run game. They you take away Russell Wilson's yardage on the ground, they are unable to –
They got four. They have four. They have four
as the defense
Pro Bowlers
goes, absolutely.
On defense not named Earl Thomas. They can play better on defense.
I don't think it's the same as losing Derek Carr, no.
No, but – it's a fair question because we still have respect for the Seahawks, but they've dropped in my mind below the Falcons and Packers over the last couple of weeks.
I agree with that.
Let's move on to the AFC East. Another great game, this time in Orchard Park.
The 27-yard field goal to win it. Goal is down. The kick is up, and the kick is good. The Miami Dolphins defeat the Buffalo Bills in overtime, 34-31.
Unbelievable.
Announcer B shoots in from outer space to interrupt Announcer A's play call.
That will not make it to the top 10, Sidney. You could delete this one off your iPad as soon as this podcast is over. Jimmy Cefalo.
Cefalo.
WQAM with the call. Yes, the field goal late in overtime ended it. Jay Ajayi broke out of an extended slump with his third 200-yard game of the season, and the Dolphins refused to let the Bills play spoiler in a 34-31 overtime win. The Dolphins now clinch a playoff spot if the Broncos lose on Christmas, and the Bills are eliminated from postseason contention for the 17th straight year.
Oh, my God.
The fans deserve better than that, and they need to put out a better product on the field. Greg, this was a gutty win for the Fish.
This was an awesome win for them and an awesome game if you guys get a chance to watch it later in the week. If you like the running game, 533 yards of rushing
wow.
between the two teams. And Jay Ajayi had a playoff-worthy performance to go out there in overtime and get – I think he had 75 of the 77 yards in that overtime drive, including, you know, one big run.
56-yard.
And he's doing it through an injured shoulder, and he is running through contact all day. It felt like – most of his 200 yards were after contact. He's doing it through injury. That's the type of thing that puts you in the playoffs. I don't think this team can win games in the playoffs, but that's the type of thing that gets you there.
And Buffalo knew what was coming. Ajayi destroyed them the first time they played.
Yeah,
you'd come up with a better, you know, way to stop.
Yeah, he had 200.
He's run for 420 yards or something like that in the two matchups. I mean, this was if you love offense in general, this was a great game. And you know, you got to give it to the Dolphins. And by the way, is there anything better for Handsome Hank?
Happy for him.
Father Christmas comes early for Hank because not only are the Dolphins probably going to the playoffs, you got Jay Ajayi, his fellow Brit, looking like a superstar. Only the fourth running back in NFL history to have three 200-yard games in one season. And a reminder, Wes, they're doing this with Matt Moore, quarterback.
Yeah, Matt Moore must have played well. My question for Greg is, is Jay Ajayi back? Is his slump over? Or is this the same Bills defense that gave up almost 300 yards to Le'Veon Bell a couple weeks
ago? Well, I think it's more on the Bills defense because shoddy tackling was an issue all day. You know, Devontae Parker had a 56-yard touchdown because of bad tackling. Kenyon Drake had a 45-yard run because of bad tackling. I think Ajayi was running well the whole time. I think it was more of a team thing. I think you got to be a little worried about the Dolphins if you're going into next week still needing a win, which we don't know right now. That's going to depend on the Denver game. They had 90 plays on defense this week. Their defense was terrible. I mean, they gave up almost 600 yards, could not get a stop until overtime against Buffalo. So I'd be a little concerned there.
Anything else, guys?
Got to wonder if Adam Gase, if they do get into the playoffs, is coach of the year material. I mean, this was a team we essentially came very close to forking
a month
into the season.
No, let the record show.
I saved Dan, it twice, actually.
Dan saved a fellow AFC East team.
Well, nice. That, I mean, that seems a little... All right, I'll take it.
You've never denied this song.
That was the first time I almost did it because, you know, I'm not a Dolphin fan by any stretch.
We should mention... This is probably the end for Rex Ryan, and he goes out because he trusts his defense too much. His defense has been the problem both years. He punts the ball away on 4th and 3 in overtime with 4.5 minutes left in overtime. That's what you do when you trust your defense. It kind of makes sense. But this is an offense-first team now, and what does his defense do? It gives up the lead right away.
4th and 3 from the 40-yard line, too.
Yeah.
Here's the irony for Rex Ryan. He made what at the moment seemed like a bad decision or a rash decision in firing Greg Roman and promoting Anthony Lynn. Now the whispers are they like Anthony Lynn so much, Bill's ownership, that they want to keep him and have him be this year's Dirk Cotter and have Rex Ryan sent away.
I don't think you should base things off one game, but if ever there was a case to be made for keeping the Tyrod, Shady, and Watkins trio together with the same scheme, this was it. Tyrod was incredible in this game. LeSean McCoy's been unbelievable all week, all year, and Sammy Watkins had the game that they've been waiting for. Had some clutch catches, some tough vertical catches. He was great.
And we should lay it out there, too, that Bills defense had a chance to win the game. Tyrod Taylor had a clutch fourth down touchdown pass to put the Bills up with 1 minute to play in the fourth quarter by 3 points, and they couldn't get the stop.
Matt Moore didn't have, a great game, but he got that field goal and a great – probably the best clutch kick of the year just about
55
by
yards.
Mr. Franks.
Yes, a 55-yarder running onto the field. Rex tried to ice – Franks on the play, but his timeout call came in too late and it was ignored by the official. Ouch. Rex, we'll talk about Rex a little bit more in a couple minutes, but let's now move. Unfortunately, we're not done talking about broken legs involving young star passers.
Shotgun for Bortles. They run a reverse, and Marquise Lee's going to throw it back to Blake. Blake is open to the 5, into the end zone, touchdown. There's a gadget for you. Marquise Lee took the toss from Bortles, and then he threw a pass back to his quarterback for the touchdown.
Frank Frangie, W-O-K-V, with the call. You know, I like what you do, Sid, with Bob Sosi. You give me the pronunciation on the printout. I'm going to need it for a couple of these.
Get left alone on Bob Frangie / Frangie.
Yeah, that one didn't have one.
Frangie?
Apparently they assume you should just know how to say
Cephalo?
That.
Cephalo?
Jimmy Cephalo played for the Dolphins.
Cedric Ceballos? Anyway.
Speedy Gonzalez, Cedric Ceballos.
The Doug Marrone revolution has begun. The Jaguars, with the help of a strangely, bizarrely effective Blake Bortles, expertly played the role of spoiler in a 38-17 win over the Tennessee Titans at the Chlorine Factory in Jacksonville. What do you think about that for a nickname?
I like it. It's clear. It's actually very factual.
Yeah. Wes, this marked the end of the road for the Titans, who laid an egg in a big spot and lost Marcus Mariota to, yes, a broken fibula.
In the NFL, you have to get used to loss. Only one of 32 teams stands atop at the end of the season. And unlike other sports, you continually lose throughout the season. You lose players. A lot of times you lose coaches. At the end of the year, you lose even more coaches. The Titans lost Marcus Mariota, and then they had to watch Matt Castle come in and knew that their season was over. Matt Castle is not taking you to the playoffs. And frankly, they ran into a buzzsaw today. Doug Marrone's Jaguars played with a lot more zest and zeal than Gus Bradley's Jaguars did.
Let's not let the Titans off the hook here. And they proved me wrong with that great win in Arrowhead. But even before the injury, they stunk in this game. They were getting outplayed thoroughly by a Jaguars team that obviously has nothing to play for. So, again, they're just like so many other teams in this league where they're a week-to-week proposition. And this week they were a bad Titans.
They were an up-and-down offense lately. You know, I know their running game had a good first half against the Broncos, but they ended up with 13 points. They didn't do anything in the first three quarters last week. Great fourth quarter. Didn't do anything in the first three quarters today. Would have been nice to see Marcus Mariota get a chance to pull off some comeback, but I don't think it was going to happen the way their defense played today anyways.
And that's why I said, Dan, don't worry about the bandwagon this year, because they're not ready to win this year.
Right.
They're a year away.
They won three games last year. This was a great season.
Well, it was a phenomenal season.
No GM in the league added more to his roster and more parts that contributed right away than John Robinson. So, yes, they don't make the playoffs this year, and the season ends in disastrous fashion. But I can't think of too many young AFC teams with a fan base that has more to look forward to. They're going to be around for a long time.
To be clear, and this is a tricky spot, we're taping this during the Saturday night Christmas Eve Texans game. The Titans, as we're taping it, are not out of this.
It's Thursday night football on Saturday.
Oh, Thursday yeah. night, Please Saturday correct. Night special yeah. football game day live.
Yes.
So it's tricky as we're taping this. In a, for instance, that Matt Cassel was playing the Texans, I don't know. I mean, the Texans aren't some world-beating team that I think would have no chance.
From a realistic angle, though, even if they sneak in, the season is over.
Right, right. I'm just saying. Okay.
Matt Cassel might be the worst player in the NFL currently.
Everything's in place now for the Titans. We'll give them a lollipop. Lollipop given. Nice season this year. Now you got to take the next step. And that means Marcus Mariota has to hit the ground running next season, which he didn't do until mid-October. And all these other pieces need to fall into place for them really to be a superpower. But a nice start, just a sour ending today. Let's move on. Oh, there's nothing sour about what happened in Cleveland today.
9 seconds and the clock is running. It's down to 7 seconds. They set it down at the 35. It's down to 4, 3, 2, 1. They got it off. The kick on the way. End over end. The kick is up. And it is no good. And the Browns have won it. A 45-yard field goal. No good. At the absolute last tick of the clock. And it's 0-14. No more on Christmas Eve. The Browns are a winner.
That might be at the top of the list.
Jimmy Donovan.
That might be number one.
Jimmy Donovan has suffered through a lot of bad football.
Into the top 10 with a bullet, Sid. Jimmy Donovan there with the call. They did it. They finally did it. Josh Lambeau's 46-yard field goal attempt as time expired when wide right, and the Browns have avoided 0-16 infamy with a 2017 win over the San Diego not-so-superchargers. Mark, before we get to Mark, I want to throw it to Hugh Jackson. Here's what the Browns coach had to say after improving to 1-14.
It's about those guys. It's a heck of a Christmas present for all involved. Because these guys work so hard, and they've given me everything they have, and so I can't thank this team enough for what they do every week to try to go out and win a game, and today we're finally successful. So today was a good day for the Browns.
Mark, you weren't thrilled when they won this game. You were happy a little later in the day, but this was a nice day for the Cleveland franchise.
I'm thrilled for Hugh Jackson and for the front office and for everyone involved with a team that would have continued to just been ripped on and made fun of all offseason had they gone 0-16. From that angle, I am happy. It was a half measure in my book had from a team building process. They lost the number one pick in it. And there's something to be said that from a I'm glad they're not 0-16, but at what point am I supposed to express downright joy? I know it's not popular that I wasn't dancing around when they won the game, but it's been an incredibly rough run for Browns fans. I'm happy for those fans that go to the stadium week after week and finally saw something worth their money. But this is a product that still needs so much work that I'm a little too hardened to have people come up and pat me on the head and say, you got your win. Have a nice time. It's good they didn't go 0-16. I know, Dan, I feel like you don't agree with me, too.
No, I don't. I don't at all.
But you're not a Browns fan. I've not missed a game in 31 years.
This is my
unique perspective.
I'm a Jets fan, so I know pain as well. And the reason I disagree is because the video after the game of what went on in the Browns locker
room. That part I don't disagree with.
Joe Thomas crying in the locker room. Hugh Jackson so emotional. They all huddle up and hug.
Joe Thomas said he hates to say it, but that was their Super Bowl. And
I couldn't be more happy for Joe Thomas and for Hugh Jackson. That's different.
It's been a horrible run for the Browns and for fans of the Browns. But you got to take – it's still just a game, and you have to me, take the good moments when they come. And for the Browns, it was today, that win, the dramatic way it ended. That's why I was personally surprised that you were
I am happy
upset
for them. I don't know. I wasn't upset. I don't know what the reaction was. People were acting like they had made the playoffs. And it's like I would
rooting
like
for the Browns
I would
to win.
Like to see the team achieve more before you start to get me, you know, having mountaintop moments in the newsroom. I think there's an element that also we're at work, and I was in the middle of doing something else at the
right.
moment. And it's like I don't know what – I'm happy, again, for the organization, it is a huge monkey off the back. But there is so much more to achieve for any of them to keep their jobs beyond
the,
next season.
That's down
right.
the road.
The fans,
that's
you know
fine,
cool?
but
like
I'm
the,
able
you know
to
who
look
else
at
was
that
celebrating?
Too.
The fans were going crazy
Good.
There. I mean, they loved
I'm,
it.
I'm happy for everyone that found joy in it. I am. I mean, and if my reaction was you know, off-putting to anyone in our newsroom, it's like I am loyal to this team. I've watched every single one of their games. I'll know when to celebrate.
As somebody who went through a lost decade and saw the Bengals lose the first 8 games of the season multiple times and be an embarrassment and laughingstock, I totally get where Mark's coming from. What's one more utter failure and laughingstock moment in 2 decades of futility? Like, to me, it's not that big of a deal if they went 0-16 compared to what you've already had to put up with.
Scarlet letter, 0-16. And that's why people are – I mean, because it's not
the
personal.
The Browns are already a laughing stock. Like, what's the scarlet letter to them?
0-16 stays
forever.
Yeah,
but for the people.
That's
I
the
mean,
way it works.
You ultimately do root for the people. And,
but we've
and
already when, established that we're happy for the people.
Right, but I mean,
couldn't be happier for
right.
Hugh Jackson, man.
They've
I mean,
been
you know,
hurt by the last 2 decades much worse than an 0-16 season would have hurt them.
Right. No, I mean Joe Thomas, who's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer sobbing in the locker room because he's a proud guy, and that would probably haunt him for the rest of his life. And it's fun to win. It's not that serious. That's the thing. In a way, it's not that serious. So you win a game, and for that one day, Joe Thomas is happy. And for that one day, Chargers fans are thinking, like, nothing can get worse for them. That the Browns kind of finally met something stronger than their 0-16 quest, which is the Chargers' inability to win in the fourth quarter. They're the worst fourth quarter team in football, and they probably got their coach fired today if he wasn't fired already.
I think they probably did. I think that I don't know what else how you argue for yourself if you're the Chargers coach.
All right, so with the win, the Browns had temporarily fallen out of the number one pick spot, but that changed later in the day.
The 49ers rolling the dice. Kaepernick rolling, running, and in for the 2-point conversion.
Well, that's just heartbreaking for the Rams.
Oh, come on.
These TV calls. Well, the TV calls aren't the same.
Do we have a bottom 5 of calls? That's right there. A little more excitement there.
At one point.
He won them the game. He went for 2 to win the game. It was great.
That's Chris Myers with Rondé Barber. Rondé Barber, after this, exclaimed, "This rivalry is alive between the 49ers and Rams." Anyway, Colin Kaepernick's 2-point conversion run with, and I'll give some excitement, onions alert, with 30 seconds to play was the difference as the 49ers snapped a 13-game losing streak with a 22-21 win over the Los Angeles Rams at the Coliseum. You know, you're a Rams fan. You decide to go to the Coliseum on Christmas Eve, and this is how you get banged?
It's pretty packed. It was pretty packed. And you watched Jared Goff have 90 yards passing with 2 interceptions and a touchdown. They've had a lot of low moments. That was a great moment for Chip Kelly and as low a moment as it's been for the Rams. And what a moment for the Browns. Seriously, that it all worked out perfectly. You know what I'm saying? We need the 49ers to win this game so that Cody Kessler comes off the bench. Gets the Browns off the schneid, and they
there you go,
and they build a statue to him, engraved with a speech that Cody Kessler made at halftime, Tim Tebow style. That they still have the one pick, that they have the number one pick.
Greg. I could not agree more with you, Greg. This is winning in full measure, where you get a victory and you get the number one pick. To have the win cost you the number one pick is not something I was excited
and
about.
And Kessler to Coleman got that key first down
was,
at the end
was.
Of the game when he came off the bench, which was
that,
nice.
That tells us that at some point, and I'm proud of you, Greg, on Saturday afternoon while the games were going on, reached out to Sidney privately and said, you know, pull this. pull my greatness from the previous podcast. I'm proud of you for going down that road.
Thank you. Well, it was really the Kessler thing I was excited.
And I
and I wanted this whole scenario to happen.
That's
and
the scenario needed to
the
happen.
The scenario was perfect.
It made it much different.
It was perfect.
A Niners offensive lineman after the 2-point conversion got hit with a personal foul for sticking a football in the face of a Rams player, and then after the kickoff that was pushed back, the Rams took over at the 43-yard line with about 21 seconds or so, or 25 seconds.
You only need about 20 yards at that point.
And three timeouts. And I tweeted at the time, this is a nice little moment opportunity for Jared Goff. His first pass probably should have been caught, but it was an out that was low and the catch wasn't made by his receiver.
Bad throw.
His second pass, terrible. Downfield, he eyes his receiver the whole way, and then it was intercepted. So Goff, West, not even remotely ready for that moment against arguably the worst team in football.
It's hard to find a more depressing operation right now. Jared Goff has been so much worse than Case Keenum, who was arguably the worst starting quarterback in the NFL, and Todd Gurley having his season out of Trent Richardson's career.
I'm already exhausted, and this I've read this morning in multiple places, about Coach X wanting to go to the Rams potentially because of the extreme talent on the Rams. They've got a franchise quarterback locked in place, and they've got so many players on both sides of the ball. Who is watching the games from this team? There are a couple talented players, but slow down on framing the Rams as some sort of A-plus destination outside of the fact that it's in Los Angeles.
Let's beat the 49. Let's not get swept by the 49ers before we get too excited.
Brutal. Let's move on to the throne of ease.
Shotgun snap to Brady with 31 seconds to go. Shuffles up. Lobs a throw right. He's got wide open behind Harris. Yeah! Touchdown, Patriots! To the right near pylon!
I'm telling you, it's a different way of thinking with this football team. They're in postseason mode. Great strike by Brady. 25-yard touchdown pass.
Bob Sosi and Scott Zolak.
Zolak.
I'll tell you what with that Scott Zolak. Every week with this guy. WBZ with the call. No trap game here. The Patriots embarrassed and undermanned and under-talented. Is that even a word? Doesn't matter.
It is now.
Jets squad, a 41-3 win that inched New England ever closer to the AFC's number one seed. And if ever there was an appropriate time to be playing the Throne of Ease theme, it's right now. Not only do you get to whoop up on an embarrassing Jets team at home on Christmas Eve, your number one top threat in the AFC, the Raiders, see their season end in week 16. Hell, week 17, you get the Dolphins and Jay Ajayi's banged up. It is a wide open path to the Super Bowl for the Pats, and they do look a lot different right now, as our friend Mr. Zolak said, than at the end of last season. Tom Brady kept his name, Greg, in the MVP race, 3 touchdowns. Jets were pathetic.
Saw everything you want to see, though. The defense has been playing bad teams, but they've been dominating against those bad teams, and that's what you want to see. I mean, there's nothing more you can do. Bryce Petty left the game with an injury through 3 quarters. This is a wild stat. The Jets had just as many turnovers, 4, as they had completions.
Yeah,
that's what you want to see out of your defense.
The Jets,
if you're the Patriots, that's the side I'm kind of worried about, and I think they can win different sorts of games now. They can be complementary, a little defense, a little running, a little Brady.
The difference between the teams in this game was startling, and I think they were, the desert people knew that, but it was scary to see. Even the Jets owner, Woody Johnson, didn't even go to this game, which you start to wonder what's going on in that building as the blowouts pile up. I think they've been beat by around 30 points in 3 out of the last 4 games, and the Pats look great. They look tremendous. Jets had just 239 total yards. The entire, Bryce Petty audition was a farce from the start. He has no opportunity with this offensive line, and he hasn't made the throws when he's had the chance, and now he's probably out for the year. He heard something pop in his shoulder, so forget about that. So we'll see what happens. And it sets up, guys, a little hot butt bowl between Rex Ryan and Todd Bowles in Week 17. Oh, what a fun scene that will be in Week 17.
You can cover that game.
Dan, you stuck up for the Jets on Thursday saying that you thought...
I stuck up for Bowles.
Well, no, but that the team had not quit on him on any level. Yeah. And I didn't. I need to watch this one closer. Or actually, I don't. But
don't.
Do you believe that they are completely plugged in as a team? And B, do you, if you had to guess, does Bowles coach this team next season?
I think he's back. I'm going to still think say he's back. And there is, they got to get rid of a couple of bad apples. Sheldon Richardson, again, after
this guy
game.
Feels like a superhero's arch villain. Can this guy just stay out of the – slow down, buddy.
When told that Brandon Marshall had said that the game was embarrassing, he said that that – Brandon Marshall should be the one that should be embarrassed, and then said, "Oh, I shouldn't say anything." Scratch. I mean, get the
but
hell out
he
of
says
town.
He also said he knows what he did.
Get the hell out of town. We don't want you here, guy.
I mean, let's be a little honest here. How many locker rooms has Brandon Marshall been kicked out of in his career?
But you're right, and that's totally fair. But Brandon Marshall has been a really good teammate last season and this season during a lot of crap with a lot of bad quarterback play. So I don't know. We don't know the story for that, but that is a bad situation.
If you're curious, and you're probably not listening to this, the number one seed is something that the NFL usually moves the times of the games to make sure that everyone's playing hard. So the Raiders are in this thing. It means the Patriots, maybe they'd move that Patriots-Dolphins game. That's a big game for both teams. That could be the playoffs on the line for the Dolphins and the one seed on the line for the Patriots.
Where do they move that game to?
I mean, they move it later in the day, maybe, Toronto. So it's the same time as the Raiders. So, I mean, so they're playing at the same
Toronto.
Time.
And
that would be fun.
And, Mark, to answer your question, I think it's even worse to say this, but I don't think this was an effort issue. I think the Jets are this bad right now with their roster that going against a stud team like New England, it doesn't get
it's just
worse.
Crazy. They won 10 games a year ago.
I mean, they've been the most injured team in the league, but they're also a terrible team. Moving on to a better team.
Ryan on a play fake again. Going to throw it for Perkins. A catch and score for Atlanta. Joshua Perkins into the end zone. And I mean a big-time catch by the rookie.
West Durham, EZGC. I've never heard of that.
That was a person?
That was a person. The Falcons are gaining steam as we head toward the regular season finish line. Matt Ryan, 27 of 33, 277 yards, two touchdowns. The Falcons, a 33-16 winner over the Panthers that clinches the NFC South title for the Falcons. Mark, Atlanta thrived in the air and on the ground in this game. I wouldn't want my team to see this this squad in the first round, would you?
Not at all. I mean, Matt Ryan could not have been more white-hot coming out of the gate. I mean, his first half stats were unbelievable. He started 10 of 10, absolutely blew up the Carolina Panthers. It got closer, you know, at one point in the third quarter, but then the Falcons, they just have so many ways to dial up plays and to find holes in coverage. 33 points feels low for a team that dropped 83 over the last two tilts. So, look, I mean, you don't want to see anything bad happen to knock these teams out of some of these seedings, but I think the Falcons in the number two seed, if they take over Seattle, they deserve it. They are the most explosive team on offense right now and the best chance for an NFC title game against the Cowboys. If it gets to that point, that could be truly competitive and fun to watch.
In a season in which it seems like all 32 teams have been the number one defense in the league at some point, everybody's had their share on that one. And a team like the Cowboys had a two-game stumble against the Vikings and Giants where their offense didn't play to its capabilities. The Packers went through a month where they weren't playing well. Mm. The Falcons' offense has been the metronome in the NFL.
Yeah.
They have been the unstoppable week in, week out best offense in the NFL.
Incredibly consistent.
You're right.
They averaged 33 points a game heading into this game, scored 33 more today.
If you think about it.
Whoa. Who locked?
Hello.
Oh, yeah.
This
is an audio program, so to inform the listeners, Christopher Wesley just raised his hand.
Yes.
I've been on these Falcons all year, and I like what I've seen.
That's two locks so far today, right? 2-0?
They're 10-5, and, you know, they blew a few fourth quarters. You know, they blew one against the Chiefs. They had a close game against the Seahawks. They blew another lead against the Chargers, a big lead. You know, they're close. They haven't been great closing those games. They're close to being a 12-13 win type of team.
They also feel like over the last 3-4 weeks, they're starting to operate at peak power on offense. I don't think you can blow a game when you're up by 25 points.
I would ask the Kissing Cousins. You guys despise domes, as everyone knows.
Yeah.
Are you upset, though, the possibility of there being multiple dome playoff games involving the Falcons?
I will not. I don't think I'll enjoy the dome atmosphere, but I think the Falcons' offense is fun enough to watch that it makes up for it. But There's nothing worse than a dome playoff.
Two sneaky, really good playoff games in the Georgia Dome the last time they were.
Yeah, there were.
I mean, the Seahawks and the 49ers. Those are great.
This time around, you don't have to pump in fake crowd noise because the team is giving you something to cheer for. I mean, with all things, yes, I typically don't like domes, but I have no problem watching this team play multiple playoff games. They're fun to watch.
A solid, nuanced answer by both of you guys. Let's move on.
And Greg.
And Greg. I didn't ask you, though, Greg.
I don't need to be asked. I'll just jump in.
When you are NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal,
yeah.
You don't need to be a
kissing guy. Cousins don't matter.
Jump in.
Raiders
NFL
don't
Network's
matter.
Greg Rosenthal.
You celebrate Christmas, you celebrate Hanukkah, you celebrate Easter, you celebrate Flag Day. Everything's coming up roses for
you. You don't think I should celebrate Flag Day?
Yeah, that's the sticking point.
I'm not American.
All right, music makes it sound like Greg got turned into a Lifetime movie.
It could happen. Let's move on and see how the Redskins are doing.
Redskins, the Bears 17. Here comes the Heat. Cousins, little dump off Chris Thompson. The catch on the right side of the 10 to the 5. He's got a hole, and he's into the end zone for a Redskins touchdown. Second score of the game for Chris Thompson, and Cousins really bought some time that time, Sonny.
A good call.
Sonny Jurgensen, legendary quarterback, not at the peak of his announcing game though today.
That was the Creature of the Black Lagoon. I don't care what you say. Larry Michael and the Creature of the Black Lagoon, WTEM, with a call.
That's a Hall of Famer, Dan.
Kirk Cousins.
That's going to get back to the Redskins organization somehow, some way.
Kirk Cousins had one touchdown through the air and two more on the ground, and the Redskins bounced back from that ugly Monday performance with a 41-21 win over the Bears. The little success story that was Matt Barkley derailed in this one as the backup threw five picks, including four in the second half. And now let's swing on over to Tabulation Corner to find out if the Redskins have a clear path to the playoffs after today's win.
I love those numbers. It really depends on the Lions. I hate to say that. They are really rooting for the Lions to lose those two games.
Why do you hate to say that?
Well, I mean, just because we're taping this early, it's not a definitive answer. I'd like to give a yes or no. They're in the mix. The Bucks loss helped them. They needed the Bucks to lose one of those two games, and now they got one.
Tabulation Corner, he takes it very seriously.
Yes, he does.
So the fact Greg disappointed that he couldn't give a more concrete answer tells you that he is invested.
He hits home runs. He doesn't hit singles or doubles.
All right, very nice. I don't know what else there is to say about this game. The Redskins were a much better team, but you give them credit on a short week bouncing back and wiping out the Bears, who Jordan Howard is really the success story here. He had another 120-yard game, but Matt Barkley didn't give them a chance in this game. Robert Kelly, I believe, left with an injury. We'll have to keep a tab on that.
Well, that
Rashad Breeland, the Redskins corner, said every pass over 15 yards that Matt Barkley threw, they all just looked at each other and said, whose turn is it now?
This was kind of an early Kirk Cousins type of performance from Barkley where he just tried to be the hero, I think, in the second half.
He started five games, and he's going to be knocking on the door to the top 10 in interceptions.
That's not ideal. The Redskins, by the way, play the Giants. We should mention the Giants today. I've done some tabulations.
Okay. Back to the corner we go.
I mean, this is a big part of today.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Giants have clinched the playoff spot.
Oh.
Wow.
They're in. And so the Reds.
Let's get ready for some more Giant football.
Well, you know how the Raiders have Matt McGloin and the Dolphins have Matt Moore. The Giants have Eli Manning, which is pretty similar.
Well, people have said that kind of stuff before.
But the Giants won't have much to play for next week, and the Redskins playing the Giants. It's going to be a big game for them. Hmm. We'll see how the Giants handle that.
Oh, I can't wait. Wes, maybe that could be the West of us. If you really feel that strongly.
Well, I don't know.
What, Eli Manning?
Yeah, failing in the playoffs. I mean, I wouldn't get behind Eli in the playoffs to go against him, but
I feel like I've been rooting against Eli Manning as long as I've been rooting against the Bengals, so it's pretty similar.
Let's move on to our final game of this Sunday night podcast Saturday special, sponsored by Friday and brought to you by Tuesday, by your good friends on Monday and Wednesday.
From the Bucks, 14, it's Ingram. His second touchdown today.
I tell you what. You couldn't have started this half any worse if you're a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan.
Like Greg Rosenthal, Kenny Albert and Darryl Johnson of Fox with the call. Drew Brees threw one touchdown pass, and Mark Ingram ran for two scores. Hopefully he wasn't fuming on the sidelines if that wasn't enough. As the Saints ended the Buccaneers' feel-good story with a 31-24 win at the Mark Sessler. 3-0. Whoa. We are flying with the locks now. And the comp, we've put it into the safe. We spin, you know, the wheel thing, or like the, what is it? It's like a circular.
It's almost like a latch. like a pirate ship wheel, almost.
Kind of like a we spin the pirate ship wheel lock, and then we leave it there, and then we go get it on Saturday.
Don't
night.
Need to think about it again.
Spin the pirate.
I gotta
ship
wait
wheel
till
lock.
Sunday for the Steelers. Bad job. I should have picked the lock that was on Saturday.
Poor showmanship.
No yep. lollipops today, anyway.
You're no Liberace, Greg. But anyway,
strong silent type.
You know, it's true. Greg, the Bucs were 8-6 and leading the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football in the fourth quarter just 6 days ago. It feels like a more innocent time now.
It does, and yet 8-7 feels right for this team. You know, their defense was good. It was a little too dependent on takeaways. They didn't get that the last few weeks. Give up 31 points here. And Jameis Winston, to me, needs to just rein it in a little bit. He's a little up and down. He's a little at least a little bit all over the place, a little out of control, I would say. Not with his emotions, but just his throws and the plays and everything from drive to drive just seems, you know, too up and down. He's a young quarterback, and that's what happened.
I mean,
that's why you go 8-7.
We talked about Matt Barkley wanting to do too much. Is there a little bit of that
Absolutely.
Going on with the team trying so hard to be that feel-good squad?
Absolutely. I mean, he's like so angry at Josh Huff for not beating a cornerback in the open field that you can just like see him like going crazy, and I'm thinking like you can't be worried about that too much.
It's like a young stallion needs to be broken in a little bit.
Yeah.
Your description reminds me of Brett Favre and Mike Holmgren just like smacking his palm against his head every time Favre does something silly. Same thing.
And they played
a good quarterback.
You know, they played this was not a shutdown defense. It was a good defense for 5-6 weeks. I think it has the makings of a good defense. I don't think it was going to be a top 5 defense.
You want a Jeopardy answer, Greg?
They're not out of it officially, by the way.
One more trip to tabulation corner.
Yeah, but it's like under 1% or something, isn't it?
They need a lot of things to happen. You know, they need the Redskins, the Lions.
Like the Lions plane being lost at sea.
It's a lot of things.
All right. Little Jeopardy time, Greg. Who are Matt McGloin, Alex Smith, Matt Moore, Tom Savage?
Tom Savage is real.
Trevor Siemian and Matt Cassel.
Who are they? They're all quarterbacks in the NFL.
I mean, they're all.
I know you're looking for more than that. I'm trying to think.
All quarterbacks better than Eli Manning right now.
All quarterbacks who have never been in my kitchen.
They are all quarterbacks who have a very good or moderate chance to be playing in the AFC playoffs against your boy. Wow.
That is a complex.
I noticed you
Jeopardy
got Ben
answer.
Roethlisberger out of it.
Yeah,
well, because he doesn't fit in with that. I'm talking about these are all terrible quarterbacks, the middling quarterbacks.
Oh, so
that you get.
What does that have
just,
to do with
just
anything?
March through. There's your Christmas gift today. Congratulations, Greg.
I mean, the Steelers are the only team in the NFL that are ranked in the top 10 in Football Outsiders offense and defense. So just throwing them out of that mix seems.
Wait.
Unfair.
You don't get it.
I'm sure they replaced the Philadelphia Eagles as the only team in the top 10 in
their defense.
I think Dan has made a solid point that the road to Super Bowl 51 for the New England Patriots, you could never have imagined it be this soft, this cushy.
It's like an easy pass lane at 4 a.m.
You're going 90 miles an hour.
There's nobody else on the road, and there's
all
no
cops. All you have
cops.
To do is stay awake.
We've seen football. We've seen what happens.
Here we go.
But I'm confident because the Patriots are playing great. That's the key part of the equation.
Oh, yeah.
They're playing their best.
They got it all.
They're playing better than I expected.
Everything's clicking.
That's the key part.
Don't think we didn't notice your nod to Cliff Clavin on that answer, too.
Thank you, sir. You know, cheers.
Well, Weston. You know.
Sorry, Bucks, by the way. Doug Martin, a healthy scratch. That was weird.
That was weird.
We will be back. There are still 3 games this week. The Cincinnati-Houston game. And then the 2 Christmas games we got to cover every day of the week this week. But we will touch on them in some capacity on Tuesday, I'm sure.
And the Lions-Cowboys, that's a big one.
Yeah, so that's the next time you'll hear from us is Tuesday on the other side of Christmas. But that's it. Now, that's it. Now it's time to begin Christmas.
Are we allowed to use this music?
I don't know. Probably not. Don't tell any shadowy league figures, Sydney. That is it for Christmas Eve edition of the Around the NFL podcast. Thank you to everyone who, if you're watching on Periscope,
Merry Christmas.
You all. That's a good job by you.
Happy holidays across the globe.
Yes, so thank you very much for listening. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Greg, happy Hanukkah.
Thanks.
And we will see you on Tuesday. Until then, this is Dan Hansen signing off for A Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, and new money behind the glass.